He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Baby, you can drive my car.
Welcome, listeners, to this week's Car Keys show. By the time you listen to this show, you may think it was done from outside the United States because I'm going to cover a lot of vehicles that I saw recently on a trip to Europe and Africa, and was fascinated from the standpoint of what we have here versus what they have there, and the differences in various things like roads, usage of roads, and the like. Jay has often commented about what he sees when he goes to Belgium and the surrounding area there, but this will be in addition to that. And here's what I discovered on a recent trip there to Africa, which included the countries of Kenya and Tanzania. And we started out, my wife and I started out on a safari in which we were driven around the African wilderness in vehicles that are totally Toyota constructed. Toyota has got a lock with their Land Cruisers on the safari business in both of those countries. There wasn't another vehicle in a commercial use situation that was anything but a Toyota Land Cruiser, a long, what I would call a long, probably pickup type of chassis. It had Land Cruiser all over it. We have never seen that kind of vehicle or chassis in this country and probably never will. But it apparently is delivered as a pickup base and is modified with a cab or a seating area behind the cab for up to six people plus luggage. The interesting thing about it is that they are all diesel vehicles or diesel-engined vehicles, and it was very clear in their usage that what Toyota delivers to at least the African countries in the form of diesel power are diesel engines that are much smaller or lower powered, however it works out, the same situation, than what we are used to in this country. I figured that out because of the way the shifting patterns were in the roads and how they used them, and going up hills when we went up hills, just how much use of the lower gears was required to move a fully loaded vehicle along at a reasonable speed. More on that later. What I also noticed in Kenya when we were in Nairobi area was the following. Toyota seems to have pretty much a lock on, I would say, 90% of the vehicles that I saw driving around Kenya of all types, passenger cars, crossovers, as we call them, and not called that there, anything that was on the road. I made a comment to one of the guides, and he said that was about right. I said it looked like that 90% of the vehicles on those roads were Toyotas, and the rest were the 10% remaining was all others combined, which included some visual sightings of Hyundais, Hyundais and Kias, which is both by the same company, and lots of older cars of assorted types and names and models. Then we went into Tanzania, and Toyota has a less of a lock on the cars in that country, as I, in my opinion, but it still was a Toyota-dominated country. And the interesting thing to me from the standpoint of what we are used to buying in this country and what you don't have to buy in those countries are the amounts of safety aspects to these vehicles, such as airbags, shatterproof glass in the windows, and seatbelt use. Well, seatbelts are there, but airbags are not as predominant in, certainly in the Toyotas, the only seat, in the safari vehicles, the only seat bag indications that I saw were on the steering wheels. But in the other, I didn't, and in the taxi cabs were the only other experience I could see the inside of any of the cars that were, we seldom used in the African countries. But that causes me to move on to the Netherlands, which is very similar to the country.
Hold on. Let's stay in Africa for a while.
Okay.
Let me ask you a few questions.
like the Land Cruisers on the safari, how old do you figure those vehicles were? I mean, are they
well? They're,
a lot
they
of
are
vehicles. Or are
the,
they all
the ones that we were in were up to 5 years old, but there were a lot of new. There are hundreds of these vehicles in the safari world, running at a time around those countries, and some of them, you know, I can't judge what brand new means. But there were lots of newer looking vehicles than what we were in.
Did you get to peek at the odometers, or did you ask about what the mileage was on the vehicle?
I did ask. Everything's in kilometers, and so are the speedometers. The kilometers in the vehicle, I didn't do every vehicle. We were in the same vehicle in each of the countries we were in. When we were in Tanzania, we were with the same guide. You had the same vehicle, and same way in Kenya. The vehicle we were in were at around 200,000 kilometer era, probably a little below in Tanzania, a little above in the Kenya vehicle.
So they go in for
service regularly. They are diesels. They are five-speed manual transmissions. And they are heavy-duty suspension equipped, as you can imagine, bouncing around the safari land and the road systems, all of which were rough additions of gravel roads.
Do the Land Cruisers have the snorkel?
They all had the snorkel air intakes going up the pillar, the passenger side pillar of the front windshield.
Yep.
I don't know exactly why they go there. There was no deep water fording that was required, but I think it had something to do with dust penetration going into the engines. The roads are extremely dusty when it's dry, and the dust is thrown up, and when in caravans of safari vehicles all going down the same road at the same time is incredible. And one driver commented that the dust filters in these snorkels had to be changed regularly to avoid damaging the internal components of the engines, I guess, wherever that air goes through the system.
Yeah, they change the air filters, I mean, I'm sure, pretty regularly. They're put to hard use. Were you in Land Cruisers in both?
Yes, they were identical. Well, they come in two. They're set up in two or three different varieties. One are the open air ones, which have roll up vinyl window sides for in case it's raining, but no hard tops. And the other ones are hard tops with a roof that goes up so that you can stand up in the vehicle and look out like it's a periscope to take pictures and look at the animals by standing and looking out when you're stopped in a safari adventure. And they were in, I believe, Tanzania, or maybe some of the parks apparently require the full cab models to be used in their area, and the others do not. But we were in an open air vehicle in Kenya the whole time, and we were in a hard top. Or hard cab vehicle in Tanzania.
Any air conditioning?
Not used, that we knew. The windows would roll down in the hard tops, and then when they push the roof up and over, it goes up about 18 inches to give you plenty of headroom if you're standing either on the seats or on the floor of the passenger compartment, and you're looking out. Seat belts were there and all seats, and they were advised to be used and used by riders such as us when we were sitting in the seats, probably to prevent potential problems if there was any some kind of accident that might occur and cause the vehicle to maybe even roll over. That was never a problem where we were.
So how many passengers were
a driver and sometimes a driver and a guide in the front two, and then three rows of seats in the back. So
three
six
rows.
People generally per vehicle.
Wait, in the Land Cruiser?
You didn't go. Eight people with the driver and a guide, if there was a guide assisting the driver, which was the case in one in Tanzania for us and not in Kenya. I think we had somebody in training, but I'm not sure.
What side of the road do they drive on?
Left, and they're right-hand drive vehicles.
Very cool.
What's also interesting in those roads, which I found very effective, were the sleeping policeman speed controls. They are basically rumbles. Well, they're more than rumble strips. They're just rises in the road every so often in the urban sections of both Kenya and Tanzania. And they basically keep the traffic at probably a speed not over 50 kilometers an hour, which is what, roughly 30 miles an hour, right?
Correct.
Or less. And they are quite prominent in the urban roads of Kenya, even a little bit outside. And any time you got to a congested, maybe village area or farm area, so nobody ever drove very quickly when we were going from one place to another, because you couldn't before you had to put the brakes on to slow down for one of these rumble places. We have those, incidentally, in Sharon, in our area, on Hilltop Road, which is was put in about, 6 months or so ago to control the speed on that road because Sharon has a public school on that road, and people were known to speed up and over the hill on Hilltop often. And I didn't know there was even a move to do that until I found them.
Until you hit it the first time.
No, the signage is very good. They call it a hump, there are three of them on this particular road in Sharon.
You know, they work very well.
Apparently very controversial, but I thought very effective, and I could see a very good use of those could be made in some of our areas around our area that people speed on in what I would call semi-residential areas.
Yeah, so in Belgium they put these little square knobs, like 3 by 3 feet, and they put like two of them across the road, and you either try to straddle them or you put two wheels on one side, and if you try to carry any kind of speed, it just never works. It just
Well, road humps are interesting in the Sharon thing because I've gone over it at angles, and I've gone over it straight, and I've played around with them to see whether you could go over in a more smooth fashion. And they've got them very effectively laid out with the signage saying road hump ahead so that you really can't go around the ends of any of them and have at least one half of a car stay on a flat road surface. But back to the African ones, they are just all over the place, especially in school districts and in the urban villages, cities where the traffic is always crowded between the buses that are carrying the public and the large trucks that are plying the roads there. So the one area where it was very clear that the diesel engines in these big trucks were had to be smaller than what our tractor drivers are benefited with is because when we were on hills in our safari vehicle trying to go up a hill and we were behind them, not only were they belching very dirty black diesel smoke, exhaust, but they were crawling up the hills. Now, granted, they were loaded. But we have, as our listeners know that drive around here, we have the hill we call Smith Hill, which is coming from Canaan going up to Salisbury. And the trucks go up that hill, and they do slow down, but they don't slow down to anywhere near the speed that the trucks trying to go up hills in the African countries we were in
Let's be honest. I think in this country, even though and I see that from since I was a kid and going back and forth between Europe and here, we've always had cars that had way more power than in other parts of the world, and I think we've gotten used to that. And even to this day, you look at the same cars. And now I'm comparing with Europe, the same car. cars in Europe and here, a lot of them have a lot more power here. We don't get what the Europeans get, you know, base models with four cylinders.
Well, let's move to Europe.
And all that is linked to, you know, the difference in fuel prices between here
and the taxes that people have to pay.
And the taxes.
And by the size of the engine they have.
We've always been used to just having, you know, more than sufficient power here. And that's why we end up even now, and it's getting even crazier with the electric cars, because we have way too much power.
That's true. And with that, I want to move into the electric car vehicle situation.
So tell us, you went to
Netherlands.
Where were you in the Netherlands, right?
We took three or four taxi rides in the Netherlands and Amsterdam specifically, and they were all Teslas. Not all the taxi cabs are Teslas, obviously, but by the time the cab that we were going to get into reached us, it happened to be a Tesla, and it was the Model Y or the Model X. And they are favored by the drivers over, first of all, the drivers own their cars. How they can afford them, I'm not sure. But I had a firsthand experience with one in a discussion with a driver that took us to a concert in Amsterdam, and he was in a Model X, which one, I guess it didn't matter. And we talked about the alternatives because he was very knowledgeable in the Mercedes and the BMW Alter and the Audi e-trons as an alternate, all of which he said were basically more expensive than what a Tesla cost. But this is where the electric vehicles are obviously ideal, and they're way ahead of us, Jay, as you know it is in Belgium, I'm sure. But I saw all sorts of electric vehicles, including VW Transit vans and other vans of the same Renault and Mercedes, all have electric vehicles in play on the roads in this country, in the Netherlands. I'm sure they do in Belgium. Electric motorbikes are all over the place. And aside from that detail, they're also very effective in many places, bike lanes in the Netherlands, and I'm sure it's probably the same in Belgium, except that the people are swarming on their feet all over the place in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam, and crossing roads has become a very difficult, for the uninformed and the public that doesn't know how to deal with it, which mainly are tourists. You have to navigate these lanes, the bike lanes and the roadways, with great caution because of the presence of lots of people on bicycles in the Netherlands and in Amsterdam. They go along at frightening speeds, especially the ones that have electric propulsion boosting, but people drive them as if they're driving to a race or in a race. But their electric cars exist in all levels of cars, from the cube cars, which I'll call smart-like but smaller. Jay, I do not know what the brand is. I don't know whether you do or not, but they are electric, and you can put two cube cars end-to-end in a parking space, in the width part of a parking space. They're so small. They're definitely just two-person vehicles.
You did not ride in one of them, did you?
No, I did not ride one on, but they scoot around
sure.
Just like
I think,
a scooter.
I think that cube thing is a Peugeot or Citroën, but I am on.
Well, there's apparently more than one brand. I've taken some pictures, which, of course, we're on radio, so we can't show them. I will show them to you off radio, and you can tell me. I took pictures of the symbol on the car, which you can often define.
Yeah.
The maker by, but I couldn't in some cases. But I also ran into Chinese cars, which we will never see, or at least not in the near future, which you may have seen
sure
in Belgium.
Will, but sure we will.
Well, we're not going to, I don't know whether they're going to see the, do you know what a seeker is? S-E-E-K-R?
I've heard of them.
I went in a showroom. I stumbled into a showroom. For our listeners, a seeker is a luxury version of an electric vehicle that the salespeople in there, compared to a BMW model that costs $60,000 to $90,000, and their top model there was $70,000 fully equipped, and you couldn't get any more.
And what makes you think we'll never see them here?
Well, the ways right now, the problem with it is that they are, and I guess they're causing the same concern in Germany and probably other European countries, is that they're subsidized so much by the Chinese that they are so well equipped and so much less expensive than the equivalent versions of BMWs, Mercedes, Audis, etc., that they will cause a big problem for the American industry. And there's been a lot of talk behind the scenes about what kind of tariffs that a president might impose on the Chinese imports. And right now it's generally considered to be the situation that they're talking about 100% tariffs or 50% tariffs on Chinese imports, which probably dampened the enthusiasm of a Chinese company trying to set up a sales network in this country, because they might take so much away from the other vehicles, the other brands, that it'd be a great outcry.
I'm looking at the website right now. They are pretty good-looking cars, I have to say. And I did not know. I thought I knew, but I honestly did not. Pretty interesting. Yeah, we know electric cars are highly subsidized in Europe. That, you know, as far as
there was also a VinFast showroom, Jay. Back to the Seeker, because I found them fascinating. They had six vehicles in their showroom, and they also had an electric boat, electric inboard drive twin screw boat that was not Seeker. It was another brand, but they had it in the showroom, and it was all fiberglass, and it was all battery operated for $70,000. And they didn't know anything about the range. But the Seeker's range was pretty impressive. It's not up to the Lucid range, as far as they could tell, but it was between 300 and 450 kilometers, which is not great when you translate it to American miles.
We're looking at 250 to 300 miles. You know.
Yeah, we are. That's correct. And the Tesla, I think, with the biggest battery, can potentially do more.
So what did your taxi driver say? How does he, is he...
Okay, here's the spread. I had a firsthand. Here's the firsthand for our listeners who want to listen, continue listening. The taxi driver that I interviewed quite completely in the trip out to where we were going, he started out, he owned a Model S Tesla. I do not know whether it was new or old. He had it for 5 years. He put over 300,000, he put around 300,000 kilometers on it during those 5 years, mostly taxi driving. He did not replace the brakes at all that entire time. He loves that. He talked that feature up a lot. He said you don't have to. You really don't have to put brakes in these cars.
You don't have to use the brakes, so there's no need to replace them.
He did have to change. He said something very interesting. He said, "I said, well, how about tires? How many kilometers do you get out of tires? Do you have to change them?" He said, he changes his tires every 3 to 5 months.
Well,
and
he
couldn't give me a real kilometer amount.
Years.
It sounded very low. He's using hand-cooked tires. You know that they are.
Yeah.
And we got into whether they were specialized for electric cars or whether they were just regulars. And he told me he didn't get specialized electric car tires, because I understand the Teslas that come into the U.S. and maybe the other electric vehicles are using tires with specialized compounds in them, inside as well as outside, to enhance the electric vehicle performances for the cars. But I understand if you got a flat tire in a Tesla and it has some kind of inner liner in it that makes a replacement tire very expensive. He knew something of that, but he said, I put hand-cooked tires on my, and he says he changes them every in under 6 months, and I'm not sure how many kilometers he told me he put in, but it certainly wasn't 100,000.
No, well, if he did 180,000 miles in 5 years, you know, he's doing, let's say, over 30,000 miles a year. If he's changing them out twice a year, he's still only doing like 15,000 miles on a set of tires. That's not a whole heck of a lot, but, you know, maybe the guy just likes to have fresh tires. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Interesting. Any charging issues in and around?
Oh, here's what he said about charging. He knew all about the Tesla chargers, which he said are terrific. He charges his vehicle every time he makes an airport drive because they've got the high-powered chargers, and he can have a cup of coffee in 20 minutes and get a good boost. He has no charger wherever he lives. He says there are no Tesla chargers in the urban centers of the towns. They're all out at airports. Apparently, in the Netherlands, which is basically Amsterdam Airport, which is the only place he's driving. But there were a lot of electric cars parked along the side streets in front of hotels and in front of the, well, for to brief us, Netherlands is a country of lots of canals. So there's as much canal taxiing and or tours businesses going on, and they parallel the main streets. And when you get all along those main streets, or the side streets, I should say, between bridges, there are periodic electric charging posts with two hitch-ups, all of which were occupied by Audis, a lot of e-trons, Volvo, Polestars, and other electric cars that people own, private vehicles. But he doesn't. There are no apparently Tesla chargers in the middle of Amsterdam, so he cannot charge his vehicle. He gets he can go 300 to 400 kilometers a day. He says there's a lot of recharging on coasting and braking, and he told me all about that, which you know about.
Yep.
He doesn't. He has no range anxiety in the taxi business, and that makes a lot of sense.
In our final minutes here, and as we always try to bring in some safety tips. Anything you've noticed in both in Africa and when you were in the Netherlands? Anything that you can think of that can help us be safer here on the roads?
That helps us be safer?
Yeah.
There's nothing in the Netherlands that makes anything safer except that. And for people, except because the traffic is constantly busy between the taxis, the Ubers, and the buses and the commercial trucks that apply the side roads in the middle of the city.
Let me ask you this then quickly. Did you notice I'm sure Amsterdam has 30K zones like all the most of the European cities now. Did you experience the 30K, like 18 miles an hour speed limits?
18 mile an hour.
Yeah, 30 km.
The fastest road was going from Amsterdam to the airport, and I think the speed limit there posted was 80 kilometers an hour. But I didn't see the so-called 18.
It's 30 km in the downtown.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, in the middle of Amsterdam, it's 30 km or less. But the signage is very poor. But you can't really go over 30 km. At any point,
anyway.
Because the traffic is so congested. Bicycles
Very
actually go faster.
Very interesting.
That's the international version of Car Keys for this week.
We will see you next week.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, Robinhood Radio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.